We're going to take a couple more calls. I don't like to leave people hanging on there and then just not get to them. That's just mean, you know. So let's talk west of the Rockies with Jean in Napa. Sorry we got you confused with Jan on the other side of the country, but we got you now. How you doing?
Hi, John B. You invited comments on Halloween.
I did.
And what I feel is that Halloween is going the same way as the winter holiday season, where winter solstice and Christmas and their deeper meanings. They seem to be getting replaced with over-commercialism. It's similar with Halloween for me. It's not so much about connecting with our ancestor spirits or feeling love and respect for those who've passed over. And Halloween is, oh, it's getting to be about fear and even mayhem. You know, people with those kinds of images and it's like real creepiness, like rotting our teeth with too much candy, and it causes diabetes too.
And don't forget those candied apples; those are rough on you too. But at least there's a medicinal, beneficial effect from eating the actual apple. I'll tell you what, I'm envious. Napa's a beautiful part of the world. I'll tell you what, the French are still mad at you because the wine's so good. But thanks very much for your call.
And
absolutely, positively, anytime, we are here for you. And by the way, if anybody else wants to vent, you can, I'm serious, shoot me an email, johnb@coasttocoastam. Now, there are 10,458 emails in this box, and I try to get to as many of them as I can, but it takes a while. There's no staff to do this, so if I don't answer your email, trust me, I read it, but I may not have a chance to answer it right away. It may be a week. So if you go, who's this? It's me answering your email from a month earlier, okay? All right, one more. Eric, east of the Rockies in Gainesville, Florida. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Excellent.
Are you a cloned human being?
No, possibly. I don't know. If I was cloned, I don't remember.
Just checking. You're my favorite host of Coast. I want to appreciate you for that.
Oh, thanks, man.
You're welcome. So I'm actually part of the Occupy movement, whatever you want to call it, down here in Gainesville, and it just seems to me that it's set up to fail. Supposedly, George Soros was the one who got it rolling. Recently sponsored by J.P. Morgan. I mean, and when I hear things like that, you know, it makes me wonder how deep everything really is. I went to our city council meeting, and it seems like the cops and the tow truck companies and the apartment complexes, they're all in a part of a scam, and it's like, you know, the people who rebel or say anything, they're always like, you know, they get taken out by a strange cancer or, you know, a strange bullet or something like that. But I've had visions that it could get kind of ugly. But you know, I mean, when it is about love, I think you're right, John. We really need to focus on love and how to fix things instead of just you know, because it's some silly stuff going on. I mean, they'll just like our occupation is. I'm not going to lie, it's pretty silly down here in Gainesville, but, you know, it's like I said, I think it might be set up to fail.
Well, it could very well be, and you don't strike me as being some sort of a CIA plant or somebody, you know, that's got an NWO, you know, badge somewhere or ID card somewhere on you.
Yeah.
I mean, you sound like the real thing to me. That's the whole thing. And somebody a while ago sent me an email that said, hey, man, stay way off of that Wall Street thing. That's a touchy subject. I know it is. What I'm trying to say is let's get this done the right way. Because if you give them an excuse through violence of saying, see, it was just a bunch of freaks that were flipping out. They're just anarchists. It's going to be pretty hard to undo the financial setup that came into being in 1913. It's going to take a minute. It's going to take more than a few people acting like hippies out of the 60s. The 60s were over 40 years ago.
True.
So, you know, not over, but, you know, 40 years ago. So let's stay focused and let's keep the substance there rather than just, you know, we don't want to get so free that we're out there killing each other. Now, that's freedom taken to it, you know.
Education is, you know, that's where the real power is, you know what I mean? There's so many things that, you know, I mean, you take about a half an hour trip on YouTube, and you'll take the red pill. Basically, is what that will happen. You do Google search some things. Obama is Osama, and Ignatan. You know, I mean, mysterious deaths with 9/11, or you know, look into GMOs and AMA and the CIA and Lockheed and Fluoride in the Water. You know, what's the chemtrail thing all about? I mean, that's what's going to save us. When people really wake up to what's really going on.
It's going to take a while because, you know, this guy who thinks he's a philosopher and has a brain in his head, his name's John Wells, he's got this saying that he likes to use from time to time, and it is, the more stuff you throw against the wall, the less of it sticks. So let's just make sure and separate the wheat from the chaff. And I thank you very much for your call. Thank you very much for your call, and be safe down there. Tell everybody just chill out, make your point, but don't be stupid. Please don't do that. We don't need any of that. I don't want anybody injured. I don't want anybody else injured. There's no need for that. None whatsoever. We'll make our point. It may take a while. It's not going to happen in a weekend or a month. It may take a while. Hang in there. Be patient. And now we're going to take a little break and come back with our guest tonight, L.A. Marzulli, and his book, The Cosmic Chess Match. Oh, yeah. This is going to be a good one. Stand by. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is L.A. Marzulli and his book, The Cosmic Chess Match. I'm just going to read a little bit here. An ongoing war has been raging in another dimension and spilling over into ours since the beginning of creation in far distant past right up to the present day. He calls it a chess match because the moves and counter moves by the players as each seeks to gain an advantage over the other. Someone will eventually pronounce checkmate. Mr. Marzulli, how are you tonight?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me here. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it goes both ways. Take us anywhere that you want to go. This is an amazing book, and there's no way for me to synopsize it for everyone, so I'm going to let you do that and just start wherever you'd like to start and tell us what's going on anyway. It looks like the world's gone nuts, and everybody everybody knows something's wrong, and because we're so connected with the internet and the text, sure. Everybody knows something's wrong. What's wrong?
Well, basically, ancient prophetic texts will tell us that there's a period of time known as the birth pangs, and it's very specific. The prophecy calls out there'll be wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, famines, pestilence, and troublesome times. Here's the deal. When that prophecy was penned 2,000 years ago, and this is what should make some of our listeners here the hair stand up on the back of her neck, because 2,000 years ago, there's no way to track any of this stuff, John. If you had an earthquake in Japan, like the one we had this year, 9.0, which, you know, the whole Fukushima thing, which we all know about, and you lived in England, you wouldn't know about that maybe for 6, 8 months, maybe even a year, 300 years ago.
If then.
Because news traveled extremely slowly, basically by word of mouth. Today, as you pointed out, with the internet and we're all wired up, news travels literally at the speed of live. So the prophecies that were written 2,000 years ago, how in the world could you track earthquakes in diverse places until the modern era? We're here. And what I see from my vantage point is that these prophecies are being fulfilled like gangbusters. And we're being distracted. Lots of red herrings out there, especially in America. More people know about American Idol, the antics of Lindsay Lohan, Charlie Sheen, you know, just to name a few. Clowns that are hoisted up for the public to look at. Meanwhile, real prophecy is actually being fulfilled. It's lining up right in front of us.
Do you feel that there is a, you must feel that there's a deliberate, well, let me just phrase it as a question. I'm not going to presume. there's a lot of deliberate disinformation. There's a lot of deliberate distraction. In fact, I'm thinking that 95% of what we're hearing, maybe more, is deliberate distraction.
Well, let me just give you a cogent example on this. 4 months ago, when the whole Comet Elenin thing was happening, and you can go back and look at different radio shows that I was on and talked about it, and I said over and over again, Comet Elenin is a no-show. It's just another red herring. Yeah, we should keep track of it. We should keep looking at the thing. But, I mean, I had emails from people, this is it, it's coinciding with the fall feast, this is, you know, and I just said, no, it's not. And I went on the record and said, no, it is not. And now there's, you know, Comet Elenin, and it's like, what's left of it is sort of out there. And we may, you know, something may happen with that. I'm not saying we shouldn't look at the signs in the heavens. We're supposed to look at that stuff. But the prophecies that I travel in and look at and keep track of, everything hinges around the Middle East. What's interesting to me is that these prophecies written thousands and thousands of years ago, and again, you know, back to the cosmic chess match, we see move, counter move, move, counter move for thousands of years. If we want to look at it that way, there's this war raging in another dimension, and it's about to spill out into this one. In fact, I would even go so far as saying that it is spilling out into this one. But many of those prophecies hinge around the Middle East, and what we see in the Middle East now, without, you know, getting too verbose on it, is extremely, extremely alarming. It's at best tenuous.
Well, that's for sure. I've never seen so much discord. Of course, there's been discord in that part of the world for a couple thousand years now, but not all at one time. What's your take on how all of this was, all of these revolutions in all these Middle Eastern countries, what you got some thoughts on that?
Because I absolutely do. I mean, we can, again, to jump into that, actually may be a good jumping off place, in the sense that, first of all, let me just say this, that I want your audience, if they can, to just drop their pretenses of what they think is going on. Just run with me for a few hours here, because that's what I have, okay? At the end of the few hours, you know, you can dismiss it and, you know, go watch whatever you want to watch or do what you want to do. But why I've got the floor here for, sharing the floor with you for the next couple of hours, let's say there's a cosmic war going on between two entities, all right? They both have made themselves known. We've got prophecies from the one entity, and I'm not going to call them any names, at least not in the beginning of the show, okay?
Okay.
They're just two different entities. They are not equally yoked, and yet there are certain protocols of this so-called chess match that they've been involved in. I call it a chess match. It's a cosmic war. There are certain protocols, some of which we know, others we don't have a clue as to why things are continuing. I will say this, that I believe the Middle East has a supernatural trigger to it. And what we are seeing, just think about this, a year ago, could any of us predicted what has now become known as the Arab Spring? Would any of us predicted that Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Bahrain, Syria, I mean, Assad is, you know, maybe weeks away from being toppled if he doesn't start a war in the region. We look around and we see the political landscape there in complete and utter upheaval. I believe that there's a supernatural trigger to that. Now, others may not agree with that. That's fine. The bottom line is, if these two forces that are sort of back behind the veil, they don't reveal themselves openly, at least we don't see them yet, but there's going to come a time, I think sooner than later, where we will see lots of manifestations on the planet. But this, to use military parlance, would be softening the objective. The wars and rumors of war, earthquakes, famines, and everything else that we're seeing, in my opinion, have a supernatural component behind it. And it's softening up the objective. In other words, if you're going to sort of create a deception at some point, and I'm going over, you know, I'm going to go somewhere with all this stuff, but if you were going to create a deception, then there are certain markers throughout time that you would set in, certain moves that you would make. So when you create this deception, the people that you're going to deceive will greet you with open arms as their saviors. And that's, I believe, what we're being set up for. And this, of course, and it gets really bizarre when you start looking into this, it dovetails and coincides and links back to ancient prophetic texts that warn of a time such as the one we're living in.
I don't want to distract you with any semantics here, but when you say supernatural,
uh-huh.
What do you mean by supernatural? You mean outside the common existence that our day to day, go down to the store, pick up a loaf of bread and a bottle of soda? What do you really mean by supernatural?
What I mean by supernatural is, I'll just give you some examples. If we walk into a room and someone was levitating, that's supernatural. If
gotcha.
We walk into a room and objects began to fly around the room, I'm actually dealing with a person right now that's having some problems with that. That's supernatural. If your 9-year-old goes to bed and in the morning he wakes up and he says, I've been abducted by aliens, and you know, you just kind of pat him on the head and you go, but no, mom, they had me on a table, they put something in my back, and you lift up the kid's shirt and there's an implant there, and a week later there's like a welt that's, and then from there the kid's hair falls out, and you know, all classic signs of abduction. You know, you're not in Kansas anymore, and why different researchers will have different For instance, Jacques Vallée would call that an interdimensional reality, messengers of deception, and that's where I'm coming from with that paradigm. Others will say these are, you know, good aliens from the Pleiades or wherever they're from. I respectfully disagree with that position. So supernatural to me, without getting real long-winded here, which I can get verbose real quick, but is anything that we look that's outside the realm of physics. I'll just tantalize you with one other thing. When we look at the Shroud of Turin, which opens up a whole can of worms here, that to me is I call it the calling card of God. That, in my opinion, is a supernatural event that literally defies our physics in every way. The fact we're developing the Watchers series, and Watchers 3 is called Fingerprints of the Supernatural, which is why I bring it up. And we did a section where we interviewed Dame Isabel Piksek, who's a particle physicist and also a world-renowned muralist. So she brings a very unique perspective when examining the Shroud of Turin. And my friend and co-producer Richard Shaw and I interviewed Dame Piksek, and it was just a fascinating interview. And she speaks very slowly and very methodically, but she talks about how the body was more or less levitated in the tomb. That it was a point of singularity, reverse Big Bang. The physics that happened in that tomb 2,000 years ago is beyond anything that we know. And then we also interviewed Barry Schwartz, who was the Shroud of Turin Research Project photographer. Out of 120 hours that they viewed the shroud, Schwartz was there for 100 hours plus. So he photographed everything. And, you know, asked him point blank, is it a painting? He just laughs and says, absolutely not. It's not a painting. How was the image put there? No one really knows. It's only speculation. So those are all fingerprints of the supernatural.
And no one has successfully discredited the shroud, have they?
Well, I mean, I would say resoundingly no. The whole brouhaha with the carbon dating, and we actually talked to Schwartz about that, and I've spoken about that on the show again, but in the past. But what's interesting, you want to talk conspiracies. They had protocols set up to do the carbon testing on the shroud. They were supposed to take three samples from three different parts of the shroud and then give them to three different laboratories to conduct the testing. Well, I'm not making this stuff up. This is all true, okay? At the last minute, these men in black come in. Just joking there, but a group of men come in, shut the whole thing down, and a team that was there to look at the shroud and take the samples was ushered out of the room. Well, after several hours or whatever, they're allowed back, and they are instructed and told that they will take one sample only from the left-hand bottom corner of the shroud. Now, when talking to people that have examined the shroud, this is the one area of the cloth that really doesn't match the other areas of the cloth. And so they took the sample, and the thing came back, 14th century, it's obviously a medieval forgery, blah, blah, blah. But those who examined the shroud said, something's wrong here. I know what the carbon dating says, but something's got to be wrong. And two people who were not really scientists took it upon themselves to do some research. They found out that the Poor Sisters of Clare did end-to-end splicing in the shroud after the 15th century fire. And what they did is they did the end-to-end splicing with cotton fibers, cotton cloth, and dyed to look like the linen. And one of the original members of the STIRP research team, you know, said, well, I can debunk that in 20 minutes. And he went into his laboratory. He had a very small section of the shroud, which was given to him, and I mean, just minuscule, and set the thing under a microscope, and to his absolute amazement, he saw the end-to-end splices. He wrote a peer-reviewed paper on this. So most of the time when the shroud is talked about in the media, the same old lie is perpetrated over and over and over again. The carbon dating was proven to be, 14th century hoax, but no one or very few people talk about, wait a second, hold on, this thing was skewed. Another interesting...
Hold on, hold your thought. We're going to have to take a hard break. It'll cut us off. Just hold your thought right there. We're going to come back with L.A. Marzulli on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by, please. Oh, Mr. Lennon. And because he had so much influence, a song like that was enough to infuse a lot of people with a lot of doubt. Now, I got to tell you, I know Paul's still around. Ringo still around, always liked his drumming. John Lennon was my favorite Beatle, but when I heard that record from the first studio, Plastic Ono Band, first studio album from that outfit, I realized what a tormented individual he was. And there are a lot of tormented individuals out there who are disconnected and isolated, and they want something, They know something's wrong, and they don't know where to go. Well, perhaps tonight, perhaps, for those who believe, no proof is necessary. For those who don't believe, no proof is possible. So it's all just one big study of why we are here. Can anyone in the either the height of their genius or the depths of their ignorance explain to me or any of us exactly why and how it is that we are here? We will proceed with our guest tonight, L.A. Marzulli, author of the book Cosmic Chess Match. It's going to get deep. Stay with us. This is Coast to Coast AM. Very quickly, I'd just like to thank everybody who has come to the CaravanToMidnight.com website. That's my little site that I put up with our first offering of these radiation detectors. We have added some excellent articles, including a release from the American Medical Association regarding radiation catastrophe preparedness from the 10th of this month. So if you'll go to CaravanToMidnight.com and click up at the top on either on important articles or on the little fanciful radiation symbol that says, why would you buy one of these? It'll take you right to the page that tells you why. Now, our guest tonight is L.A. Marzulli, and we were talking about carbon dating. I heard a long time ago that carbon dating had been pretty much discredited. Then a few years went by, and they said, no, it works fine, because there was some discrepancy in the rate of release of nitrogen from the various samples and so forth. So to go back to the shroud, is this stuff even credible anymore? Because I'm not sure if it is or not. Some schools say yes, some say no, but I keep hearing carbon-14 dating, you know?
And what's interesting is the media will play this over and over and over again. And so it's a shame because, again, it goes back to the idea that the protocol that was set up to look at the shroud was violated at the last minute. And Barry Schwartz also tells us that there was a donation of £1 million given to Oxford University for discrediting the shroud. It was given anonymously.
Why does that not surprise me?
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me.
So, you know, you talk about conspiracies, and added to that, they did some restoration on the shroud. And I won't mention the particular person's name, but this person came in, and they had access to the shroud. And get this, when I heard this, I got sick to my stomach, literally. They vacuumed the shroud. They vacuumed it. They took a high-powered vacuum cleaner and vacuumed it, basically destroying any type of forensic evidence that may have been on the cloth. They've just completely ruined the artifact. But the image is still there. It's distorted because they put a new backing onto the cloth. I mean, they basically, you might as well just burn the thing. You know, I mean, that's almost what they've done. But what's interesting is that the shroud remained hidden until the invention of photography. And then it became, wow, what is this? Because when Secunda Pia took his first photograph of the shroud, remember, this is like decades and decades ago, glass plates. So he's taking it and he's got a negative. But when he looks at the negative in his developing room, it's a positive image. And he almost dropped the plate. He was absolutely freaked. And of course, who wouldn't be? And that really started the study of the shroud as we know it today. In my opinion, I think it's the real deal. But getting back on track, that, to me, is a fingerprint of the supernatural.
All right. I am God and declare the end from the beginning from ancient times. What's all this about a cosmic battle that's going on that's spilling over into our dimension, and how is it showing itself?
Okay, there's two forces, like we kind of hinted at in the first segment here. There are two forces, and they've been battling, literally, for millennia. The entire cosmos, seen and unseen, is the playing field here. Unfortunately, we are basically pawns in this chess match, but we have from prophecy, and it's really funny. I got a few emails today because people, you know, look at your marquee and realize I'm coming on, and with all due respect, they talk about Zechariah Sitchin and others of his ilk and the Anunnaki and all that, and it's great mythos. And the mythos, and I will use that word at least for the time being, of the prophetic text that I look at. People say, well, why should we believe your prophetic text over, let's say, what we have in the Sumerian tablets? And I say, because we've got a thread of prophecy that goes back 4,000 years with great specificity by different authors and no collusion between any of these guys, and they are pointing out things, events, with great specificity that we're seeing unfold right before us. There's no other book on this planet that I'm aware of that does that, including Nostradamus and the Mayans and Edgar Cayce and everybody else, not with 100% accuracy. And I get into that in the Cosmic Chess Match. Why is it that some of these guys get some things right? And that gets into the different dimensions, interdimensional realities, the second heaven, as I prefer to call it, the third heaven, and, of course, Earth is the first heaven. So, let me just touch on that. We're here in the first heaven, and I need to explain this now because it's sort of an interesting analogy of how we treat space-time. We're in a cornfield. The corn stalks are 7-8 feet over our head, okay? We're planted in that cornfield. Guess what? We see the corn stalk in front of us and the corn stalks right next to us. That's it. That's all we see. And that's analogous to our relationship in time, with time. We experience space-time continuum in this dimension 1 second at a time. Where is the now? Oops, we just passed the now, as Gary Stearman would like to say. We're never in the now because the now is always moving forward. Every time I think I'm in the now, no, the now is, you just said it, that's 4 seconds ago. Now we're in the now, and it's always moving forward. We're stuck in the space-time continuum in this cornfield analogy. Another entity pulls up in a very large red fire truck with an extension ladder. He rolls that thing up. He's up 2 stories, climbs to the top of a ladder, and guess what? He sees that cornfield and the cornfields in the distance. So his view of time as we know it is completely different than ours. This entity can see through time further than we can. Is he all-knowing? Absolutely not. But he can see through time further. Now we have the supreme being, the all-knowing one, in the space shuttle with a telescopic lens. He can see the diamond I just dropped out of my pocket in the cornfield. He can zoom back and see not only the cornfield, but other fields surrounding it. And zoom back further, he can see the state of Kansas. Zoom back further, the entire United States. His view. And it's sort of a simple analogy, but it's in a way we can get our heads around these different dimensions. His view, he can access all points of time simultaneously because for him, if it is a him, and I believe it is, time as we know it does not exist. And that's why in the prophecies he calls out things and he says, I alone know the end from the beginning and the beginning from the end. That's quite a claim. And the whole point is, if that's true, then show me. And I think it's uniquely demonstrated in the prophetic text that I look at.
That's amazing. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned something about that. And I don't fancy myself a great thinker, although I do a great deal of thinking. And it's my understanding that in Scripture, I was looking for the passage, but it's a thick book, and I have not found it. But time is something that's given to us so we can keep up with where we are in this realm. I know there's a scriptural reference to that, and to pull science into it as well. Very recently, there has been this information has been released that certain subatomic particles are actually able to exist in different places at the same time. Yeah. So this is not that much of a stretch, really, once you know this.
And that it's absolutely fascinating. And what we find out is that if an observer is there, the particle will react. If the observer is not there, the particle won't react. I mean, it's just bizarre. Type of stuff that, in quantum physics, and I'm not a quantum physicist, and I don't pretend to understand that I don't, but I know probably just enough to get me in trouble. But I mean, reality as we know it, we interviewed Dr. Chuck Missler, and he came up with a wonderful, he believes, or maybe not believes, maybe too strong of a word, he postulates that we are in a giant hologram, that reality, this whole reality as we know it, is nothing more than some sort of a hologram that we're in. A hologram. This whole universe could be some sort of like a holographic existence. And we see, again, you mentioned Scripture. We see stories of good entities popping in and out of this dimension. And I talk about that, you know, in everything I write, that we are dealing with supernatural beings. And isn't it interesting that when these supernatural beings manifest, both the good guys and the bad guys, they have the same properties. And we see that, you know, people who encounter them have exactly, the good guys and the bad guys have the same reaction. They usually do a face plant. In other words, the power that's there is so overwhelming to the normal human that we do a face plant. We just short circuit and, you know, fall as if dead. And if it's the good guys, they'll come over and cheer you up and get you back on your feet and speak words of encouragement. If they're the bad guys, they don't do that. They thrive off the fear.
You know, and it's interesting because when we say supernatural, I'm glad you gave your definition of that, because it supernatural is a couple of notches up from not normal. Mm-hmm. But it's only supernatural if we don't understand it. I mean, let's take the Bible, for example. It's like, this is the account of what happened from Adam forward. It doesn't suggest in there that there was nothing before that, or
correct,
that there weren't, you know what I mean? There's,
yeah,
there's been a lot of rising and falling. And right there it says in Isaiah 46:10, I am God and declare the end from the beginning, from ancient times. That's really quite a statement. I mean, I challenge anybody to come up with anything as original or as absolutely deep. And when people say, well, you know, you get into all this religion stuff and it's like you've abandoned science. Science doesn't invent anything. Science discovers things. And as Richard Feynman said, science is the belief in the ignorance of experts.
He's great.
So he really is. Just keep it rolling. L.A., just keep it rolling. Take us anywhere you want to go. I'd rather hear you talk than hear me talk.
No,
I'm sure the audience would agree.
I loved your explanation, John. That was well put out. It's interesting that these, and I'll just sort of tip my hand early here. It's, you know, I believe the Most High God, El Elyon, is the Hebrew word. And we've got all this, you know, you mentioned scripture. We've got tons of scripture. And I want to make something really clear. There are some of your listeners out there, the moment I say scripture, they get the eyeball roll.
And they start reaching for the dial.
Right. And I'm not going there. I'm not talking church or what you think it is. I'm talking the supernatural. There's a cosmic war that's happening. Where prophecy has told us about this cosmic war, and it's spilling out onto this planet. And at some moment in time, it's really, look, there's a prophecy that says that one group of angels, Michael, the good guys, fights with the fallen one and his other angels. They're all in the second heaven right now, okay? And guess what? They get their rear end skis booted out of the second heaven, and they come to earth. The scripture tells us, woe to the inhabitants of earth, because the fallen one, the dragon, has now been cast down to you, and he knows his time is short. And there it goes right back into our cornfield analogy. In other words, he's outside space-time as we know it, and he enjoys that perspective. Well, when he's booted out of the second heaven and he shows up here, he doesn't enjoy that anymore. He doesn't enjoy the perspective that he once held. And, you know, it's like people go, why is this happening? Well, it's another analogy. Many of us have gone to the doctor, you know, dentist's office and gotten a root canal. We don't walk around remembering the root canal. We don't wake up, you know, a week later going, wow, what a great root canal. We don't think about that. You know, we get over it a couple of days later, a week later, it's gone. You don't think about the root canal. Well, human existence, this passion play, this cosmic war, has a beginning and an end. And we are actually moving towards the end of the war. We're told how it's going to end. We're told the principal players at the end. All this is prophetic. It's like right there, hiding in plain sight. All we need to do is pick it up and read it. And it tells us exactly what's going on. And what's interesting is many of the nations of those ancient prophetic texts that tell us and warn us of these battles in sort of the last days, we see these alliances happening on the 6 o'clock news. I mean, it's like screaming at us, for those of us who have eyes to see and that want to see. So this war, it's like a giant root canal, in the sense that, you sit there and you go, well, look at the untold misery on this planet for thousands of years. I get that. And I have no easy answer for that. I only know that at some point in time, if we are then translated into eternity, where time and space doesn't exist anymore, then our perspective will be sort of like a root canal. We'll remember it and go, well, but I'm outside of space-time now. I've got, you know, eternity in front of me. So we're not going to be dwelling on, you know, the nonsense that's happening on the planet. And when I say nonsense, I mean, there's some horrific things happening on this globe. I mean, all of us know that the tension, it's just between the nations, between people, between tribes, It's crazy what's going on, and it's only going to get worse, unfortunately, in my opinion.
Listen, there are a lot of really good emails coming in, and anybody who would like to a question for L.A. Marzulli is welcome to send an email to johnb@coasttocoastam.com. That's J-O-H-N-B's and Bravo. I prefer Bravo to boy. Thank you very much, at coasttocoastam.com. It seems to me like it's all the same. I've said this many times, and I'll continue to say it because I mean it. It's the same goo coming out of all of the news channels. That's one of the reasons that I really love this program, because, I mean, it's, and once you remove any spirituality, let's just call it that. Let's not call it Christianity. Let's just call it spirituality. Once you remove that from people's minds completely, how much easier do they become to control?
That's a great question. There's a whole chapter I do on Darwinism in the Cosmic Chess Match. And the reason why I do that, in order to create a new paradigm in human beings, you first must do away with the paradigm that they believe in, the worldview in which they embrace. In order to do that, you've got to break it down somewhere. Well, Darwinism is a theory, and one of my favorite shots is the movie Expelled. If your listeners have not seen Expelled, Google it on YouTube. You can see it. And Ben Stein sits down with, I believe, one of the world's foremost evolutionists, Richard Dawkins, and poses the question, Rich, where did life begin? You know, look, if we're intellectually honest, I don't know either, okay? But neither does Dawkins. No one knows. We don't even know where we are. We're floating on this little blue planet in the middle of who knows where, and we have no clue how we got here. Well, Dawkins' answer to this is, and he sits down with Ben Stein, and he says, well, maybe millions of years ago, in another bad English accent, maybe millions of years ago, in another galaxy someplace, a race of aliens, highly evolved aliens, somehow created us. In other words, so that's his mythos. That's what he believes in. Or let's say that's what he's pointing to. So it's really, if we look at it, he's completely intellectually bankrupt. He has no clue where life began. He could only offer a myth, a scenario of what he thinks. Well, it's intellectual fascism for him to take God or creation ex nihilo from nothing out of the equation. I mean, why should, you know, it's okay for him to believe in his mythos. Why can't others who believe in a supreme being believe in that? It's intellectual fascism. But I digress. Darwinism is interesting because what Darwinism does, first of all, it's a theory. It's never been proven. And all you Darwinists out there, please don't send me, you know, death by a thousand emails. Please don't send me all these emails showing me this, and the other thing. I get it. Believe what you want to believe, but it's just a theory. Now, I don't believe in macroevolution. I do believe in microevolution. What I mean by that is a finch's beak over a period of five or six generations can adapt on some level. But the finch is still a finch. The finch isn't turning to a monkey. The reason for this is now because we know the deoxyribonucleic double helix spiral, DNA, okay, has that coding system in it. And it begs the question, where does such an incredible complex system of DNA evolve from? Why is it that the finch is always the finch and will stay a finch till the cows come home? Because the DNA of the finch remains the DNA of the finch. The DNA of the chimpanzee remains the DNA of the chimpanzee. And what do we find in going back into ancient scripture? We find each made according to its kind.
That's correct.
It's like right screaming at us. It's right there.
Unless it's another English guy with an English accent over there in a lab in England, you know, that's making like composite creatures, which Parliament is up in arms about. Certain members of it are, for sure. We're with L.A. Marzulli tonight, and he's got a great book called The Cosmic Chess Match. If you buy it or get it at the library, whatever you may do, you will enjoy it. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, with the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. We'll get deeper into this when we come back. Thank you for being with us on Coast to Coast AM.